Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's Thomas Drantz live here from the Kintech Studio. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express out Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver. Online at DunbarLumber.com. So, I talked about this a little bit earlier in the show, Drancer, while you were off doing your other job covering morning skate for the Canucks here. But, you know, we played and reacted to the Elias Pettersson press conference yesterday on the show, and it was hard not to have the reaction of, man, this guy's in a really, really tough spot hearing it. And so hard not to have that reaction, in fact, that even the guys on the morning show, Jason Brough, chief Petey hater himself, Jason Brough, so moved by what he heard from Elias Pettersson yesterday at the podium, so distraught about Elias Pettersson's mental state and where he is right now. Halvor Brough cooking up a little something, cooking up a movement for the game tonight to get fans on Petey's side.
Well, and so I hope everyone joins in so that we don't have to think about Jason Brough's movement.
No, that would make us think about it. Then we'd all be like participating in it. That's the worst case scenario.
Let's go, Petey. That's the chant.
That's the chant. That's the proposal and, on the table from Halford and Brough.
And as I understand it, it's let's go, Petey. Clap, 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 clap.
Yeah.
Let's go, Petey.
Yes.
So this is what
one of the classic sports chants.
This is what Halford and Brough want, and what a myriad of Canucks fans have already joined in on. They've bought in on the ground floor.
100%.
Don Taylor, however, is out, citing superstition.
The Casey DeSmith
let's
example?
Let's go Casey did not exactly work well. The Anthony Beauvillier deflection goal in the first period. You got to put your superstitions aside, right? Pettersson talked about his lack of confidence. He was at least evasive,
mm-hmm.
if not, you know, outright disdainful over the course of that media availability on Wednesday at Rogers Arena. Can positive vibes from this fan base help get Petey off the schneid? They've certainly helped this team rally in a variety of key games, not just score the tying goal in the third period, but immediately had the game winner within a minute, in part because the arena is about to explode. Can that energy, which has helped fuel this Canucks playoff run, help Elias Pettersson find his game? I don't know, but I think we're going to find out because fans are into this.
Fans are bought in. And I do wonder how much of it from Brough's perspective is like...
I love Brough astroturfing a movement, by the way.
they've done it before.
Incredible stuff. Well, shotgun?
Yeah. Let's hope it has a different ending this time.
Turned out great.
I think part of it from Brough's perspective is like, all right, I'm going to go full on positive, and then if that doesn't work, get ready for how negative I can be. It's like, hey, I tried the positivity.
I had your back.
I'm putting words in Brough's mouth there a little bit, but
no,
I should do that.
posting Justin Bourne style breakdowns of Pettersson.
Look at him skate by the guy.
Come on, Brough.
But there it is. It's from Halford and Brough.
I don't know why. Brough does not sound like Mickey Mouse.
No, he does not. Does not even a little bit.
It's more like
they want it. And it's specifically, it's not just in game. It's not like if Petey does something well that they're asking for here. Okay. They're asking for on the concourse, going into the building, pregame, before the anthems, after anthems, at puck drop, when he's on the ice. Let's go, Petey. That's the chant they're demanding. As I said earlier, they're throwing down the gauntlet. They want everyone on board. And look, it'd be a cool moment. It'd be a cool scene if they get that going at the arena tonight. Will it work? Who knows? But at this point, anything is worth trying for the Vancouver Canucks when it comes
to Elias Pettersson and his performance. And Ratakit certainly trying different things, shuffling the lines ahead of tonight's game five between the Canucks and the Oilers. And, you know, we touched on it just really briefly. Obviously, it's not the most interesting aspect of this lineup shuffle. Really, the top three lines are going to be the focus here. But the fourth line skating as Neil Zaman, Phil DiGiuseppe, and Vasily Podkolzin. And somebody texts in here, Johnny from Kelowna, over under 8 minutes for the fourth line. If it is, in fact, those three as a fourth line, if there's no 11-7 curveball from Rick Tocchet, I don't think we're going to see a lot of that fourth line, right? Because I think Rick Tocchet's been able to give his fourth line a consistent shift because of the presence of Teddy Bluger. And yeah, Phil DiGiuseppe's still there, but with Podkolzin coming in for his first playoff action, with Neil Zaman typically playing a very sheltered role, you know, only really getting out there in big minutes on the penalty kill, I definitely think we're going to see significantly reduced minutes for that fourth line. Vasily Podkolzin, what's your reaction to him drawing into the lineup at this point? Because really, this is three changes of forwards, right? Linus Karlsson, yep. Sam Lafferty, Ilya Mikheyev all out. Podkolzin, Phil DiGiuseppe, and Nils Höglander come in. We've already seen Phil DiGiuseppe and Höglander in the playoffs, but this is the first action for Vasily Podkolzin.
I mean, I think it's a big opportunity. You know, it hasn't been the most inspiring professional performance from Podkolzin across both the AHL and the NHL level this season, and yet, you know, you can see the impact that the size made, especially when Dakota Joshua drew out of the lineup, right? You can see the work rate. You can occasionally see those moments where he goes hard to the net and actually looks like a pretty dangerous player. In flashes, there are moments where Vasily Podkolzin feels like the sort of player maybe bred to make an impact in a game like tonight, mm-hmm. right? And yet, he hasn't put that together consistently, and certainly he hasn't produced consistently. So it's amazing, though, how one big moment crashing the crease, one big moment where his shot plays, will fundamentally alter the narrative around this player and the season that he's had. You know, that's the chance for Podkolzin. And I think it's a major one. You know, whether it's Bluger, who's pending unrestricted free agent, Lindholm, Joshua, Lafferty, opportunity knocks mm-hmm. for Podkolzin, who signed an extension in the, immediately prior to the playoffs beginning. Opportunity knocks next season. Like, this is a player who could absolutely carve out a top nine role depending on what sort of summer he has, what he can actually bring, and what transpires in the lineup ahead of him. And the Canucks, frankly, probably need him to be a fixture in their bottom six and one who can pitch in, you know, 10 goals, 20 points, and solid two-way value in all three zones. And I think he's capable of that. He certainly has looked capable of that at various points in his career. He's certainly got a lot of the things that you're looking for in a player to do that. You know, is my confidence in his skill level to be like a heavy press type diminished as a result of him not really popping over the last 18 months? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
As it should be. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about him being like a bottom six fixture with the ability to impact games with his size and work rate. I think he can do that. And again, we've talked about it before. This is a player who throughout his career has actually played his best in the heaviest games, in the playoffs. As just like a spark plug sort of attempt, I think this makes sense. Now, you know me, I'm always about the risk. And I do think there is some risk in removing both Lafferty and Mikheyev from the lineup, in that you move those guys out and you are slower, right? And team speed, we talk about this a fair bit, is a pretty delicate thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's amazing the impact that, like, you add one Milan Lucic type to your lineup or one Corey Perry for the Edmonton Oilers, and all of a sudden, you know, as a group, you move less quickly. One thing I've liked about, like, Lafferty with Bluger and DiGiuseppe, whether it's worked or not, one thing I've liked about Mikheyev, even, despite, you know, rolling my eyes when he gets scoring chances, is when Vancouver's top skilled guys get a breather, at the very least, the fourth line is still able to play recognizably Canucks hockey in terms yep. of how they structurally attack, how they forecheck, the way that they sort of keep the team speed up and are able to create pressure and duress on the opponent, even if they're not like a threat to score or a threat to have the same volume of heavy shifts that, you know, for example, Miller, Suter, and Besser are, right? I like that about that fourth line. And now you've got Amon, who played 6 minutes in game four, Podkolzin making his playoff debut, right? And Phil DiGiuseppe, more of a known quantity. And can that line actually play something that's more like safe, recognizable Canucks hockey? There's at least a chance that the answer is no. Like, there's at least a chance that this game goes along, the Canucks only feel comfortable playing nine forwards.
The big question for me is, will they get the opportunity? How many opportunities will they get to do it? Like I hear what you're saying, and I wonder, like, I wouldn't be surprised, like, 6 minutes kind of thing for that line, honestly.
Yeah.
And I do wonder also, you made the point about the Vasily Podkolzin, the opportunity and some of the offensive upside that you see there in flashes. And we were talking about, okay, if they go 11-7 and you're mixing guys through the lineup, I wonder if it is 12-6, if you see, you know, JT Miller double shifting between Phil DiGiuseppe and Vasily Podkolzin in spots, right? Because all of a sudden that turns into a lineup where you can plausibly hope for some offensive generation out of it, right? Because Neil Zaman, typically, they haven't really played him as a every shift 5-on-5 center. He's been in there for penalty killing. He's played on the wing, even on the fourth line. So I'm skeptical how often we're going to see, you know, Neil Zaman out for a face-off with Phil DiGiuseppe and Vasily Podkolzin. Maybe we will if that's how we principally see Podkolzin, though. Like, it's going to be hard for him to take advantage of this opportunity if that's the situation. So I wonder, even in a 12-6 world, if we see some of that mixing and matching, some of those, you know, okay, after an icing, get Miller out there with these guys, you know, get maybe Lindholm, get Patterson out, something like that, just to give Podkolzin and Phil DiGiuseppe a little bit more of an opportunity.
Yeah, well, and again, it's, for me, if the Canucks are chasing this game, that fourth line's going to be played out anyway, right? But the question for me is, if the Canucks are leading, especially if they're leading by like two and the Oilers are pouring it on, that's where you want to be able to roll your
fourth line,
you know, every 7 minutes, just like take 30 or 45 seconds and don't get pinned,
mm-hmm.
you know, like that's it. Can they do that? And for me, I don't know. Like, I don't know if that's a better bet than Mikheyev, Amon, Lafferty would be. Right. So
I just think, to me, it's not so much about the wingers as it is about the center. And
right.
Bluger was the thing that more than anything else allowed them to do that.
Yep,
and you
fair.
Move him up the lineup. It's just I understand not even trying to like replace it and patch it together because so much of it came down to Bluger.
This is sort of why I wonder about 11-7. So after the Canucks skated, as a group, Lafferty, Mikheyev, and Mark Friedman got the rinse skate shooting on Nikita Tolopilo.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. With Juulsen and Amon effectively not putting in the work that you'd expect of healthy scratch. Now, Juulsen did not take line rushes on one of Vancouver's top three pairs. I asked Tocchet about the 11-7. I would guess that Amon is in, based off of Tocchet not really responding with interest to the question, to be frank. Like, Tocchet tends to show his hand, right? I don't think he's someone who tries to hide things. Like, I don't think he's eager to do that. I think he'd rather just be straightforward. I think that's just true to who he is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'd like to just be straightforward with you, or as straightforward as I can be. So, but I sort of wonder if they do it, because the way that the Canucks top nine is now composed, there are four centermen there, right? And you could, if you ran 11-7, roll an additional center through that lineup. And with Podkolzin and DiGiuseppe on the ice, I mean, Miller, Podkolzin, we saw work really well down the stretch of the Bruce There It Is run, right? Lindholm can go out there to take some defensive zone draws. Bluger can go out there to just like help guys earn a breather. I mean, there's options for the Canucks to consider if they wanted to effectively build a fourth line center in the aggregate out of their four centermen who are playing in the top nine. So I sort of wonder, really
five with Suter.
Right, five with Suter. That's a good point. So, you know, that to me is an interesting thought experiment, but not something I expect to see tonight. I wonder if it like works well enough that they go to it again in game six, if that might be like an additional wrinkle.
And again, I wonder if we see some of that fourth line center in the aggregate, even if Neil Zaman is in the lineup.
Oh, I think we will.
You know what I mean? Like, I still think we'll see some of that cycling through, some of that double shifting there.
Especially on defensive zone draws. So anyway, fourth line, we've spent too much time talking about it, given the impact they'll probably have.
Impossible.
Thatcher Demko didn't skate with the group. Now, will we play Rick talking about in the next segment? So I'm curious. I need to hear it again, because it felt to me like Tocchet kind of ducked my did Demko skate question. Did you hear it?
No, I haven't listened to it yet.
Okay. So I want to like see that. But I do think it's notable that Demko didn't skate with the full group today, given the update, given what I saw after morning skate on Tuesday ahead of game 4 in Edmonton, and given the optimistic update from Rick Tocchet on Wednesday, an update that he mostly echoed today, I sort of wondered if Demko might hit the benchmark of either skating with the full group today, or at least being the goalie who works out the scratches, right? Which is a little bit more of a dynamic environment than putting in work with Ian Clark. I never saw him at all, but that doesn't mean that he didn't necessarily put in work with like the Black Aces at a skate earlier in the day or later in the day, which, you know, I'm not going to witness. So not exactly sure where we're at here, but there are benchmarks that if Demko is going to be an option in this series, he's got to start hitting. The fact that he wasn't in either environment today doesn't necessarily mean he missed one of those benchmarks, but certainly reduces the probability, in my view, of him being an option for game 6. You know, I would expect like work out with the scratches and then work out with the full group and then get cleared. Like that to me would seem kind of bare minimum. Again, though, he may have done that work today at a time when the media wasn't in the building. So I'm not taking this to the bank, just sort of trying to share my process as I work through this and regard it skeptically based on what I'm actually able to see. The fact that Demko didn't join the group for the skate felt notable to me anyway.
And yeah, we'll hear from Rick Tocchet in the next segment. So we'll, as you said, be able to kind of hear it again, hear it in context as well. His answer about Thatcher Demko and some of his other thoughts, obviously lots to get into with Rick Tocchet today, given the way he's juggling the lineup ahead of this game 5 here. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. People a little bit split on the Let's Go Petey thing in our inbox. This one, remember when they chanted to Smith's name to get him going at the start of the game? Didn't turn out too well. North Creek Dan says, way to amp up the pressure on the guy, bruv. Somebody else saying there with Don Taylor, that they thinks maybe a little superstition. Maybe it's just an acknowledgement that he's not playing that well. But then we have Chris and Duncan saying, or you can double shift Petey, especially after he'll be on fire after the Let's Go Petey chants. Get him out there. Double shift him.
Hey.
I do like the idea of just like, we're going to play you so much, you're going to be too tired to think about what you're doing out there. You're going to be exhausted and just playing on pure instinct. Get out there, Petey. Go play.
Hey, Petey. Let's go.
Let's go. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go. Keep going out there.
Petey. Let's go, Petey.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Comma, Petey.
Let's go. Yeah, I mean, look, I get the trepidation. It's hard to get everyone on board with anything, especially in the Canucks fan base.
Yes.
But you know what? This is one of those moments. Game 5. A chance to hand this Oilers team one of the most devastating defeats for an elite core group in NHL history.
Wow. All right. Let's go.
This is their window, man.
Dreisaitl
is a consistent 50-goal, 100-point center. Making $8.5 million. He is the most underpaid player in the league. He has 10 points in this series. They have gotten like 6 total saves the entire round. And if they don't win now, McDavid and like time ticks on and McDavid and Draisaitl get closer to 30. And the 150-point McDavid seasons and the 50-50 seasons from Draisaitl become somewhat less frequent, even as they remain elite, elite players. And Draisaitl's contract expires, and there's speculation about his future, and at the very least, there's a massive raise coming to accommodate. $13.5 million, $14.5 million? Like, very seriously.
Oh, yeah.
Costing, like, the increase that Dreisaitl's going to get.
Dreisaitl's the guy who has a chance to totally reset the market 100%. For the high-end players. Yeah.
Dreisaitl's next deal is going to be the difference between his current deal and his next deal is going to be like the cost of a good second-line player, or as the Edmonton Oilers call it, the surplus paid to a second-pair defender. Now, if they can't get by the Canucks here, right, that's a body blow.
Mm-hmm.
To their chances of winning a cup in the McDavid-Dreisaitl era, and it could be the Canucks to deal them that body blow. Tonight's the night. Tonight's the night to come together, to bring it together like a beacon. Let's go, Petey. Clap, clap, clap. Tonight's the night. Bring it.
By the way, well said, by the way, our colleague IMAC.
It's like before I could get excited, I first needed to talk about like cap allocation in the future and like a
You really
team's
brought
window.
The heat out of nowhere. I wasn't expecting it. I was like, all right, let's
well,
go.
It's because most people get excited about like, I'm going to support my favorite player. He's going through something.
This team could crumble in historic fashion. Get your popcorn ready. Ian McIntyre, our colleague at Sportsnet, passing along this note. Phil DiGiuseppe, of course, was absent from the team for personal reasons. IMAC tweets, Phil DiGiuseppe returns to van lineup with focus and motivation. He and his wife, Maggie, welcomed a son, Sam, to their family on Sunday. The quote from Phil DiGiuseppe is, it was a tough pregnancy. Our little kid's a warrior. I can't be more proud of him and her. Both are healthy. They're coming home today. So that's fantastic news. Congratulations to Phil, Maggie, the whole family. Great to hear that everyone's healthy and happy.
Phil DiGiuseppe, anytime goal scorer. Go look at that price.
That new dad adrenaline, new dad strength, new dad energy. Expect that from PDG tonight.
Like Alex Burrows, game 7, slayed the dragon. Had the kid the next day.
There you go.
Named her Victoria.
That's awesome.
It's really cool.
It's very, very good. So again, congratulations to Phil DiGiuseppe and his family, and fantastic to hear that everyone's doing well. And he must be absolutely like just on cloud 9 to get back into the game tonight for the Canucks. Okay, we will hear from Rick Tocchet next. Continue to take your text too. It is Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Get your keys to an all-star collection of Kubota products at one of their 6 locations across BC this spring. Visit DLEAMC.com. We are coming to you live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of 5-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 40% of Canadians 45 plus fear becoming a burden to their families, but firmly want to age in place. Personal support workers are here to help. In recognition of PSW Day on May 19th, Home Equity Bank is celebrating the vital support home healthcare professionals provide to Canadians 55 and better with their annual Home Care Heroes Awards. Home Equity Bank's CHIP Health product can help you access your home equity to afford home care and stay in the home you love. Visit chip.ca to learn more. All right, it's a playoff game day here. Rick Tocchet, lots to get into with the head coach after the lineup shuffle today for the Canucks. So here is the head coach, Rick Tocchet.
Yeah, I think being at home, you can throw a couple of different looks. So we'll do that tonight with some different looks.
And in terms of impacting the series or impacting the flow of play, I mean, is this targeted at just better controlling play 5-on-5 or getting in better at the forecheck? Like, what are you hoping to get more of from these lines?
Yeah, I think puck possession and forecheck is something that we've talked about where we have to improve on. Maybe a couple of changes in here that can help it, but it's still you have to be connected at 5. I think these are the two areas that will help us, you know, whether it's controlled play or... And like I told you guys, also there are plays there to be made. We're not making them, and I think we got to be a little bit more aggressive sometimes when we have those plays.
And just one more for me, sorry, Farhan.
Sure.
Can you give us an update? Did Demko skate today, or will he skate today? And additionally, is there any chance you'll go 11-7 today, given that Neil Zaman didn't get skated with the scratches?
So for Demmer, he's improved immensely. Like I said to you guys, and yeah, he has skated. We've been able to calculate when he skates or not, and I think we've had a good pattern, and he's made huge strides. As of the 7-11, I don't know about that. Yeah.
Teddy Bluger had a lot of success with Joshua and Garland earlier this season before Dakota broke his hand. What was it about that trio that worked?
Close together. I think obviously Garland and... Dakota have good chemistry. They're really good on the forecheck, and I think Teddy was kind of that third guy that kind of read the play. you know, jump in there when he could. He's really good. He was good at reading off Garland and Dak. They were an opportunistic group. I mean, they scored some big goals for us, and they carried the play for us. You know, when we were struggling, that line was something we really relied on. So they're familiar with each other.
It looks like two guys may get back in, Hoglander and Pod Colson. What do you need to see from those guys?
Well, Hoggy is obviously at his best when he's forechecking, and he's being a pest out there. And he's we talk about dog on the bone. And I think Pods, he's a guy that, same thing. You know, if he can be first on the forecheck, get in on some people, which we need. And I think that's why with those two guys, they can supply that for us.
What would you say the energy level that you need to see from Hoglander is? Because I think that's been something that he's struggled to do. Why has he struggled to maintain his energy in this playoff game?
Yeah, I don't know if it's like a... He's always has energy. I think I find because the playoffs started, instead of taking the puck to the net, he's pulling up. When he gets in the neutral zone, he's looking to pass. That's his experience. I told him today, you got the puck. And you got a chance to skate with a neutral and go. I think right now he was looking to pass to Petey all the time, or he would just, he would slow down. And I told him, just because it's regular season, you don't slow the playoffs. You just keep doing your thing. I think it's experience. I think him sitting out a few games, he's had some. Maybe people don't really care, but I care. But I thought he had some really good practices the last 2 days, and his attitude's been great. So I think he'll be good tonight.
A little bit of left field here.
Yeah.
There's a report out there. Jeremy Colton's been let go.
We have nothing to announce.
Okay. Okay, that's fine. Okay.
Rick, you've been big on stick on puck all season long, and I know that at times the team had some issues with that. But 4 games into this, the Oilers have had 10 power plays, maybe feels like more, as you guys have had some troubles killing them. But just between the whistles, what do you think of the way that you guys have defended and your discipline?
Yeah, I mean, for the listen, let's face it, they've had the puck a lot, and they've had some, a lot of shots. But, we're tied 2-2, and the reason it is because I think we've defended well. We've defended the middle. But saying that, we got to possess a puck more. We can't just let them keep shooting pucks. I get it. But if they are, it's going to be on the outside. I thought we've been disciplined. There hasn't been a lot of stick penalties on both sides. I mean, I think the series has been evenly officiated. I think the officials have been doing a great job. I've heard from their side, they're not complaining. So I think it's been great, to be honest with you.
And how do you assess your penalty kill? Obviously, you're facing a historic power play on the other side. Are your guys doing what you as coaches want them to do and just accepting that you're running into this machine on the other side? Or are there still things that you have to do better as a penalty-killing group?
Well, correct me, most of these power plays are near the end of the power play. So that's one. So maybe that you don't have the right personnel. You can't have the guys play 2 minutes. And I feel at the end, I think for whatever reason, we're going passive when we should be aggressive. On that goal, Dreisaitl, we had an opportunity to be aggressive. We didn't. Then we were over-aggressive on Bouchard. That's the underneath play to McDavid. So I think that's a little bit system and a little bit of hesitancy not to go. When you play that power play, the reaction is, oh, my God. But you can't give them too much. They're great. Don't get me wrong. But there are times, there's trigger points for us to go, and we're not going. Enough.
Hey, Rick. Did you as a coach feel you had to do something to help Petey and give him better line mates?
Yeah.
How do you think him playing on the wing might change things versus him playing at center?
Yeah, first of all, I like the hybrid thing. It's not they can switch. I don't really care. For me with Petey, it's just landmarks. We were talking today about his landmarks. Is get to those landmarks quick to move your feet. I think if he knows it. And I get it. He wants the puck, but now he's at a point where somebody can give it to me. Then what happens when nobody gives it to you? You stand still. So I told him today, just go to your landmarks. That's it. If you get them, you get them. If you don't, you don't. Then you go from there. And I think we watched video today again, and he was like, he's energized. And I think that's my job. I got to help the kid out too. It's not all on him. I got to get him going with line mates or different approaches. It's 2-2 going in our building. he should be excited about it.
It's kind of now or never as far as production from him.
No, I don't think it like that. I honestly don't. I think he's just got to play his game. Whether he gets a point tonight, I really don't care if he scores. Obviously, we would love him to score. Don't get me wrong. I just want him to do the two simple things I want tonight. I know it'll help him. And don't worry about anything else.
Rick, when you talk about that aggression and playing aggressively rather than passively, how fine of a line is that, particularly for a young player like Hoglander or Podkolzin that doesn't have that experience?
Well, that's why those games that he has played Hoggy, where I think it's going to help him for tonight, taking those two games off, spend some time with the coaches, video, having a couple of good practices, I think he'll be a lot more, the game will be a little slower for him tonight, even though it's a, you know, it's going to be a high-paced game. And for me, for a young kid like that, he's at his best when he takes pucks to the net. And I told him today, unless somebody's wide open, I want you taking the puck to the net. Like he's deferring too much, and that's not Hoggy, you know, his hockey. You know, he's a guy that he smells an opening, he takes it. He attacks it, and he takes people with him. I mean, he scored some hell of goals off the rush, too. So, you know, I told him, you don't have to dump the puck in all the time. If there's time and space, take it. Take one of those D wide. You know, things like that. And I think you just got to keep living it. Those young guys got to live it. You know, they got to keep playing. These are big games. This is big for these guys playing these type of temperature games. Huge.
Not that you want to see it, but would you rather see a player make a mistake going, being aggressive and going up 100% rather than kind of being passive or being caught in no man's land?
Well, there's a different type of aggressive. Like, you just don't dive in. Like, that's dumb hockey. I don't want guys being aggressive. You just dive in and give them, there's a time and place. But being aggressive, you know, you take a guy wide and you see somebody open and you try to pass them, it hits a stick, it goes the other way, they get a 3-on-2. Can't blame the kid. I'm not going to yell at the kid for that. But you know, if you're diving everywhere, I mean, that's not good aggression hockey. So I think there's a balance.
Hey, Rick, as you've gotten to know Podkolzin, I think you've called him a moose, you've called him a bull, yeah, and you've called him a bit of an intangible. The fact that you guys are at a league low in terms of shots through 10 games historically in the playoffs, is there something in Pod's game that might be an intangible in the sense of even through measured minutes, you've got a pretty good shot. You're looking for goals. You might not get him from your top two lines. How much of a wild card is he tonight?
Yeah, he's a wild card. I mean, if Podsy plays predictable hockey tonight, he'll be good. Like, if he knows exactly where the puck is going, that's where the moose comes in, right? If he's waiting to go and he's, I call it whatever, pause hockey, where you're just waiting around, then it's not his game. He's just going to be standing around. You know, he's going to be late everywhere. So if he plays predictable and be aggressive on the predictable hockey, if you think the puck's going there, just go. And if it doesn't, I'd rather you just keep, like, at least you're going instead of reading the play after it's happened. So that's what we talked about today. You know, don't worry about making a mistake on a read. Just be aggressive on your reads, especially when you don't have the puck.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet with lots of thoughts there to share with the media ahead of a massive game 5 between the Canucks and the Oilers. And man, you know, I did a vibe check off the top of the show, Drancer, like, are people excited? Are they nervous? What's their gut telling them about this one? And I don't really know myself. I mean, I'm excited to watch the game. I'm excited for the spectacle of it, for the entertainment factor, obviously. But in terms of trying to kind of predict where this one is going tonight, where it's going for the final three games of the series, who's going to emerge victorious? I mean, I picked the Canucks in 7. Obviously, I was expecting a very, very close series anyways. It's played out that way in a lot of respects. It's 2-2, but I'm having a tough time kind of game to game getting a feel for this one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, me too. After the Canucks won game 3 and the Oilers massively altered their lineup and Pickard was in, like, I entered game 4. I wasn't going to say this publicly, but I was interested to see whether or not the Oilers had been, like, broken. And I don't mean broken in terms of, like, their spirit. I mean, sometimes a team across sports just, like, loses their juice and it can happen pretty suddenly and it's hard to, like, pinpoint it in real time, you know. The Philadelphia Eagles in the NFL this year stand out to me, where, like, in the lead up to that Bucks game, I kind of knew that they were hooped. That was one that I was able to sniff out, but, you know, I wasn't able to sniff out the Kings until it had happened.
Day of game 4, right? Well, before you joined the show, I opened it being like, this feels like desperation stuff from the Oilers. 100%. The way they're talking, the way they're acting, Pickard going in, like, we're going to double shift McDavid and Dreisel. I was very much Simon from the same hymn book, right? Like, uh-oh, this does not fill me with confidence as an observer here.
And then they put together their most complete performance, yep. And it's like, have they broken the Canucks? Like, we've now seen them just absolutely throttle Vancouver territorially in three of these four games. And frankly, in the first half of the first game until one of their key players got hurt. So, you know, the fact is like, we sometimes get these, you know, the 2011 Stanley Cup final was kind of like this, where it was like Canucks win the first two and it's like they win by one goal, both games. They're super narrow, right? An overtime winner and Ravi Torres goal, 13 seconds yeah. to play. And it's like, the Canucks have got this. And then they get crunched, like 8-0, or was it 8-1, 8-0, something
yeah.
like that. And
I think it was 5-1 in there for sure, yeah.
And it's like, the Canucks are dead. And then they win in game five. And it's like, the Canucks are going to do it. And, you know, the fundamental fact was that as that was occurring, it was the Canucks who were breaking, right? By the time they got to game seven, they had nothing left. Now, I find the best way to analyze these types of series is to just look at the big picture, right? And in so doing, I thought maybe we could go over something I think I want to do more next year is like revisit our feel to try and like be accountable and see what we got wrong and what we got right and sort of frame the discussion that way. So remember, I had five reasons the Canucks yep. can make this a series, five reasons the Oilers will win. We presented these before the series. So let's start with the five reasons the Canucks can make this the series. Number one was Seelovs, right? And the idea that if Vancouver wins this series, it's going to be one in which it begins to feel like the Oilers have to work twice as hard as Vancouver does to score. I'd say that's held up.
Yep.
PK trending upward. The idea that they don't need to shut down Edmonton 5-on-4, but need to limit the damage until late in the series where the whistle goes away. They've done this, but they haven't necessarily done it by killing penalties. They've done it by limiting
the opportunities. Yeah, but yeah. They've got tied to the point of the series where there tends to be fewer opportunities anyway.
100%. They've hewed that edge pretty well, right? Like, they haven't given the Oilers too many automatics. And you know, I haven't loved the way that this series has been called from an like interference perspective. There's been so much of it both ways, but obviously the Oilers have more of the puck, so more of it going against the Oilers and against their top players in particular. But, you know, that's just me. I want to see a game where skilled players are put into a position to make the difference. This series has been called in a way where, you know, you're more likely to have Teddy Blueger make the difference, which is fine. Certainly favors Vancouver, but I just don't like it as a
favors the team with Teddy Blueger.
Yeah. I don't like it as a matter of taste anyway, whatever. Speed up front versus the Oilers D, the idea of the Canucks forcing turnovers. Now, this one is played intermittently.
Yeah.
It's been a factor in the Canucks wins, but the Oilers have moved the puck pretty well overall.
But when Tockett's talking about, like, there are plays to be made out there, this is part of what he's getting at, that they're not being able to do. Like, it's not that it was wrong to highlight that as a potential factor. It could be a big factor if they're able to do it more consistently. They just haven't been able to get there.
Well, and I think it has been a factor in their wins.
When they've been playing well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just that that's been too few and far between. The overall defensive game, now the Oilers are generating 25-ish scoring chances a game, which is a lot, but they were generating like 30-plus every game against the LA Kings.
Yeah.
And the LA Kings are a heck of a defensive outfit.
And I even think in game four, like, there's still a ton of, you know, sticks in passing lanes, deflected passes in the defensive zone, like all of those things.
I strongly disagree with you. I thought that was their worst defensive performance of the series by a mile.
It was, but there were still a lot of those things.
Because the
level they established earlier in the series was high. It was very high.
The Oilers were super unlucky to not be up 3-0, especially after that power play. And then there were like 2-on-1s where the pass gets through, but the shot misses. Anyway, I thought that was not a particularly strong Canucks defensive performance relative to what we've seen in other games, like the third period of game three to me is what I'd highlight. And then the idea of the Oilers as not being a truth serum quality team yet, the F around and find out about it all, which I think has been a shaping factor.
That's one of maybe the key thing in this series going on.
Well, and I would say this is, if you want to make the bull case for the Oilers in games 5, 6, 7 here, right, over the balance of the series is, did the Oilers F around, find out, and figure out a solution of how they have to play against the Canucks, which includes splitting Nurse CeCe, limiting CeCe's minutes, and like really avoiding the you can't do that mistake,
mm-hmm.
which they did not make, period. in game four? Is that like a new mode of Oilers defensive commitment where maybe the Canucks are going to be able to be shut down to the point where they're getting like, you know, single digit scoring chances 5-on-5, which is what happened in game four. The bull case for me is like, if the Oilers can bottle that performance and replicate it, market it, distribute it, sell it on counter to, store counters in game 5, 6, 7, that's going to be a real problem for Vancouver. And yet I still doubt Edmonton's ability. Like, I still doubt Edmonton's nerve relative to Vancouver's, right? Like, I still buy that the Canucks are the team more likely to limit mistakes in the crucial moments in game 5, 6, 7. So, yeah.
That's one of the defining factors. It's just like, does Edmonton really know how to make the most of their territorial advantage consistently, right? Yeah. Do they have that in them? And I don't think we have an answer to that yet.
So I think we have a pretty good, I think we had a pretty good feel of how the Canucks could make this a series. Now, reasons why the Oilers will win. We highlighted McDavid, Dreisaitl, and Edmonton's unmatchable top gear, which has absolutely played and shaped the series, even though the Oilers haven't run the Canucks over. We highlighted the Oilers' power play. It is sick every time we see it, but they're only getting 2.5 opportunities a game, which took the upside case of a quick series, a quick Oilers defeat, kind of off the table, right? A world where the Oilers got like 5-6 opportunities in one of those early games, that's a totally different world than the one this series has been played in, and I think probably results in a different outcome based on what we've seen the Oilers' power play do. We talked about depth offense, right? The idea that, in fact, Vancouver's depth scoring is not an edge over Edmonton's. And that's played out, right? All of Vancouver's 5-on-5 goals have come with Lindholm and Pettersson on the ice. Lindholm and Miller on the ice. The bottom six hasn't done a lot. Now, Edmonton's bottom six has not done a lot either. But the point was not that Edmonton's depth will overwhelm Vancouver's. It was Vancouver's depth can't be counted on necessarily to overwhelm Edmonton's. And I think that's played. Rush defense, right? The fact that Vancouver's rush defense sagged as that Predators series went along. What can McDavid do? Well, the games Vancouver's lost, it was McDavid, right, charging in to tie the game. And the game Vancouver lost in game four, it was the big Ryan Nugent-Hopkins goal, which sort of spotted the Oilers that key second goal, which Vancouver was able to eliminate that deficit off a double deflection late. But nonetheless, I think the Oilers have generated off the rush. That has been an advantage for Edmonton in this series, and then lack of offense generally. Now, this is not played. The Canucks have managed to score.
Well, it hasn't. They've managed to score.
They haven't managed to generate.
There hasn't been the significant. Yeah, they haven't spent as much time and generated as much chances as you'd want.
The Canucks haven't come close to managing 20 scoring chances in a game. The Oilers have not come close to not managing 20 scoring chances a game, with the exception of game one. But they had 12 in the first half of the game, so, at which point they led 4-1. So, There's no doubt. The Oilers generate so much more than Vancouver does, but when you've got Seelovs and he's playing like this and the Oilers have Pickard, that's been an advantage for Vancouver in this series.
Yeah, so a lot of things that it's interesting because a lot of things that were foreseeable before the series kind of playing out in some way, and yet still these kind of wild swings between which team is on the has the upper hand in the series. And I think the keys for me are going to be, does the lineup shuffle from Rick Tocchet bring more of that depth scoring element into play for the Canucks? Does it give them three lines that can generate chances that are a legitimate threat to put the puck in the net? Because they haven't had that in this series. That's one. And then does it also put enough stress on the Oilers to kind of bring that, are you guys pretenders, narrative back into play, to put it lightly, right? Like, do you guys really have that experience, that juice to win these games in the playoffs if the Canucks are playing their best hockey? And hey, we will start to get an answer to that one tonight at Rogers Arena. Should be a fantastic one. Okay, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll continue to take your text. Brendan Batchelor, he's the voice of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650. He will join us next. Always a pleasure to chat with Batch. We'll get his thoughts on the lineup juggle from Rick Tocchet, what he expects to see from the Canucks and the Oilers tonight in Game 5. Final segment of the show here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Your mind.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz. This hour is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at DunbarLumber.com. Playoff game day here. You'll hear the call, of course, on Sportsnet 650, your home of the Canucks. And the man on the mic for the call will be Brendan Batchelor, as always. He joins us now to look ahead to the game. Batch, what's going on, man?
Not too much. I enjoyed the segment you guys just did, looking back at some of the stuff from the start of the series. Some much-needed structure and accountability on Canucks Talk.
Although it wasn't so much accountability as it was like, we were right about this list. Good for us.
Not everything. Not everything.
Not quite everything.
Yeah, you know, there was some good, there was some bad, but there was a lot of good. You guys kind of know what you're talking about.
Let's not go that far. Let's not go that far, Patch. But one guy who definitely does know what he's talking about, does know what he's doing, is Rick Tocchet, right? And he has just been so on point all year long, even going back to last season, but pressing the right buttons, pulling the right strings at the right time. This is his biggest test yet, his biggest challenge yet, right? Going into this game, massive stakes with the series tied, game five at home. And he does a pretty significant lineup juggle, okay? Blueger back with Joshua and Garland, Pettersson on the wing with Lindholm. What's your reaction to all of the lineup changes that Rick Tocchet made today?
Yeah, you know, as Tocchet said yesterday, it's a big swing, right? Like, you know, in a series where every game has been decided by one goal, to make four changes to your lineup, one of them is Soucy coming back in. So, you know, three changes that are really coaches' decision kind of changes.
Elective.
As opposed to just getting a guy that you would have wanted back in there anyway. You know, it's a big swing, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I think on paper, I like the way it looks. I think it counteracts how much success the Oilers had with McDavid and Dreisaitl on separate lines, because now it gets back to the Canucks rolling three lines deep, at least, if you can get some good minutes and some production out of Lindholm, Hoglander, and Pettersson, and putting Teddy Blueger, who I think has remained solid throughout the season, back in the spot where he had the most success. And let's be honest, the other two guys in Joshua and Garland had the most success they've had this season when they were on that line too. It makes a lot of sense, and it takes a lot of cojones for Rick Tocchet to make a move like that for a game like this. So I like the willingness to adapt, the willingness to make a big change, and we'll see how it plays out tonight.
I always think my, like, radicalization into underlying data, Batch was mostly informed by the fact that when I checked the underlying numbers, right, the numbers tended to reflect poorly on the guy whom I'd most frequently heard the play-by-play broadcaster be like, and he can't quite keep the puck in, and he just loses that battle. You know what I'm saying? So I'm curious to know, given how much control of the puck the Oilers feel like they've had, and the numbers say that they have had, in your view, calling this series, how lopsided has the run of play been, and do you think that necessitated the lineup tweaks that Rick Tocchet has ushered in today?
Yeah, I mean, it's been pretty lopsided, let's be honest. Like, I'm saying the names McDavid, Dreisaitl, Nugent-Hopkins, whoever you want to pick, Hyman, a lot more regularly than I'm saying the names of the Canucks' key players. And that, for me, is my takeaway, too, right? Like, if I'm not saying a guy's name very much, then that means he's not very involved for good or for bad reason, right? Like, when you said, you know, talking about, like, the guy that you're always saying, oh, he didn't get the puck out. Like, I feel that guy has been Ian Cole in this series. Like, I've said that a lot.
100%.
Cole with the puck on his stick, can't get it out, or throws it up the boards, Oilers hold in. Like, that's happening a lot, and it's been a tough series for Cole. In terms of the run of play, I think the ice has been quite tilted in favor of the Oilers, but at the same time, we're sitting here in a 2-2 tie with 4 1-goal games. You have to credit the way the Canucks have defended so that the Oilers have not been able to convert all that zone time and all that possession time and all that ozone time into enough offense to really take over the series from a results standpoint. And, you know, you do worry, though, that as each game passes on, there's more and more likelihood that does happen from Edmonton's side of things. So, you know, I'm sure Rick Tocchet's seeing that on video as well. Certainly he's breaking down the video and watching the games back to a much greater degree than I am. And if this shift in deployment up front can even help you tilt that a little bit back the other way, I'm not going to sit here and say that the Canucks are going to dominate possession and zone time tonight. But anything you can claw back in terms of making sure the Oilers aren't in your zone or don't have the puck on their stick as much could be the difference now between winning and losing this series, or getting a key goal or conceding a key goal at a big time in a big game.
Yeah, and obviously I think everyone can be better, right, for the Canucks in terms of having that possession. Rick Tocchet has talked about, you know, there's plays out there to be had. We just got to be better on the forecheck, a little bit more willing to actually make a play. So that's a team-wide thing. But obviously a lot of the focus is going to be on Elias Pettersson. And I don't want to say that this entire shuffle of the lineup from Rick Tocchet is aimed at getting Pettersson going. But, of course, that's a huge part of the motivation. He's expected to be one of this team's best players and best producers, and it just hasn't been close to that in the playoffs. What do you think about specifically the move, moving Pettersson to the wing, right? Not that he's been a defensive liability or anything at center, but just do you think that could change things up a little bit, maybe reduce his defensive responsibilities a little bit, give him that spark that he needs to get going on the wing?
Yeah, I asked Rick Tocchet about that this morning in the interview that will air on the pregame show, you know, about half an hour before the start of the game. And Tocchet kind of talked about, well, it might be sort of a hybrid where Pettersson and Lindholm are both taking draws and both have that center ice responsibility. But he also talked about how being on the wing could free up Pettersson to play with more speed. So he can be the guy streaking down the wing looking for the pass, or he can be the guy slashing through the neutral zone as an option to attack with speed. And I think that's a big part of trying to get Pettersson going here, because we've heard Tocchet talk so much about him needing to move his feet. Well, there's more opportunity for him to do that if he doesn't need to be the defensively responsible centerman, if he has the freedom to be the guy that blows the zone or is streaking on the weak side looking for someone to get a puck through to him. And, you know, talked about it in the press conference as well, about these benchmarks that he wants Pettersson getting to his spots rather than trying to analyze the game before he makes decisions. And, you know, I'm sure you guys have seen it, but for any listeners that haven't, Justin Bourne did a great piece on Sportsnet.ca breaking down some of the video about how Pettersson's, you know, maybe thinking before he's acting, and how that kind of needs to be done in tandem, or at least you need to be more diligent and proactive in the decisions you're making, because it kind of looks like he's a step behind right now. So putting him on the wing, freeing him up a little bit more to use his speed, get his feet moving, and talking about him hitting these specific spots that they want him to hit and getting there first before he worries about his reads and things like that, I think is the right pathway to try and get more out of a guy that obviously is pretty low on confidence right now.
With how the Oilers have played, especially their top six has played and effectively dominated the series 5-on-5 territorially, even if the results have been a little more even than that, mostly because of Oilers goaltending and Canucks shooting efficiency. Would you expect to see Pettersson, Lindholm, Hoglander be the line that matches McLeod primarily, or are we going to see them play Dreisaitl while Joshua and Garland go wreak havoc against the bottom six of Edmonton? Like, what's your expectation there for how Rick Tocchet will handle it in game five?
I think he'd probably use the Joshua Garland line in the matchup role, because you're going to trust Bluger in that situation. Like, you know, maybe you give up offensive upside on that line with Lindholm there, but Bluger's a capable two-way centerman, and that line, all three of those guys played their best hockey this year when they were together. So the honest answer is probably a mix of both, and it may depend on game state. So if they've got a lead and they're protecting it, we might even see him move the lines back and put Lindholm back with Joshua and Garland if he feels more comfortable using those guys, so that Lindholm can win some key draws as they try to protect the lead. Conversely, if they're trailing, then he might work even harder to get that Lindholm line out there against more favorable matchups in the bottom six of the Oilers. But to start, I think I would look at it and say that the Bluger line makes more sense in a matchup role, just because the offensive ceiling of the Lindholm line is higher, and the potential for those guys to create offense against mismatches is greater, in my opinion. And I know some of the numbers from when those three guys played together this season haven't necessarily looked great, but I think we need to provide context, too, that there's a good likelihood Lindholm was playing through an injury in that stretch, and it's also come in the second half when Pettersson has played his worst hockey of the season. So even though the numbers from the regular season tend to indicate that they might not be the best fit, I think situationally with where the team is at right now, they have the opportunity to generate offense, and they have the opportunity to do it, especially in a game where Tocchet controls the matchups and can get them out there against, you know, the McLeod line or the Derek Ryan line situationally in the game tonight. So that is kind of like we talk so much about how the third line or the depth matchups were going to be the difference for the Canucks. Mm-hmm. Could they generate offense down their lineup to counteract the fact that, you know, McDavid and Dreisaitl are likely to generate more offense than your top guys? And to me, if you're making this move to this level of deployment, it's because you feel like you need to start winning that matchup that you haven't to this point yet. And the best way to do that, in my mind, is with Pettersson and Lindholm on the ice against depth opposition.
Yeah, I think another thing the Canucks can do to help win some of those matchups more consistently, and this is to help all the forwards, is play Quinn Hughes a little bit more, right? I mean, the numbers for Quinn Hughes when he's on the ice are so much more flattering than what's happening for the team when he's off the ice, which is no surprise, right? Like, that's one of the things that makes Quinn Hughes such an exceptional defenseman. It has been a little surprising to me that we haven't seen his minutes spike. Like, you do typically see a true superstar number one defenseman's minutes spike in the playoffs. Do you think Rick Tocchet might have to play that card a little bit more, play the Quinn Hughes card a little bit more, especially on home ice tonight, to try to tilt the ice in their favor a little bit?
So I'm of two minds on this. One way I say yes, absolutely. You know, when your season or a series is on the line and it's a crucial swing game, you want your best players on the ice as much as possible to impact things. Now, is it reasonable for him to play like 29 minutes a night, like some of the Oilers' top players were earlier in the series? I think that would potentially be a bridge too far for a guy that averaged around 24 minutes a game this season. And that is something that, you know, Tocchet, and I talked about this, I can't remember if it was with you guys or not, but I talked about it coming into the playoffs about how I thought that was a big edge for the Canucks, that Tocchet had really managed Hughes' minutes well during the regular season. Like, after Tocchet arrived last season, Hughes averaged more than 26 minutes a night, and I think he led the league in average ice time from the day that Rick Tocchet was named head coach until the end of the regular season. That has not been the case this year. Hughes has not been up there with the likes of Makar and Doughty in terms of how much he plays per game. So, yes, they can certainly get him out there more. How much more? I'm not sure. That remains to be seen. The other side of the coin is, though, that Soucy comes back into the lineup tonight, and he's trusted Soucy and Myers with a lot of those matchup minutes and had a relative level of success in terms of limiting the Oilers' ability to actually put the puck in the net at 5-on-5 earlier in the series. And again, I know we can talk all about they've faced a lot of pressure defensively, they've given up scoring chances, but they did have some success with that. So based on what Tocchet has done in the past, I would say that I'm still expecting Soucy and Myers to play a lot of those key matchup minutes tonight. And Hughes' deployment may be entirely dependent on the state of the game. Can they get an early goal? Are they building a lead? Or are they chasing the game? And if they're chasing the game and they need offense, then Hughes absolutely needs to play more than he has to this point in the series.
We were talking in the last segment, and I guess you heard it, about how easy it's been to overreact to the result of each game, and yet no team has won two in a row yet with Game 5 on tap. What's your just gut feel expectation for the flow of Game 5?
I would imagine the flow will be similar to what we've seen throughout the series, which is the Oilers territorially dominating the Canucks. Now, as this is hard to talk about because I keep coming back to game state. Like, Canucks had a really good punch at the start of Game 3, and that set the tone for the way that game was played and allowed them to get the win on the road. Conversely, it was the Oilers that came out the more desperate and hungry team at the start of Game 4. So, do the Canucks have that strong start with the crowd behind them on home ice? Can they get an early goal and put the Oilers under a bit of duress? Can they test Calvin Pickard more than they did in game four? I think that is the number one key to this game tonight. And it's not necessarily saying that their shot totals need to be higher, although I think based on the fact that they're setting records for the lowest number of shots through the first 10 games of a playoff, we can say they do need to get more pucks to the net. But can they create more scoring chances? Can they get more good looks early in the game on Pickard than they did in game four and really force him to prove himself as a capable goaltender? Because that to me is if you're going to break the spirit of the Oilers and take control of this series, both in terms of the game score, but in terms of the feeling around things, and you talked about how the emotions have shifted so much game to game, then the key to that is denting their faith in their goaltending again, like you did with Stuart Skinner through the first three games of the series. So, you know, territorially, again, the Oilers are going to dominate possession. They're going to create the greater looks. That's what we've seen through the series. That's what we expect to see tonight. It would be a real departure from everything that this series has been about to that point. We're flat. But if the Canucks can have the strong.
We'll cut Batch there. We've only got a few minutes left here on the show. Yeah, so I'm not sure what happened with the connection there. But
I mostly just wanted his take on the Petey chant. But that's okay.
It's too bad. It would have been a good thing to end on. But we'll let Batch go.
Yeah,
that was weird.
You know what? Did you ever see the movie The Arrival? Not to be confused with
Arrival.
Arrival.
I've seen Arrival. I don't think I've seen the
Denis Villeneuve classic.
Yeah.
The Arrival. It's
I don't think so.
The ones where the aliens walk on knees that are bent the wrong way.
Doesn't ring a bell. But interesting that they're both about aliens. The movies.
Well, yeah. I mean, what else would it be about?
What do you mean? Lots of other things. Arrive.
Oh man, it's a classic starring Charlie Sheen. I forgot that with Richard Schiff. In the cast. Anyway, the aliens make sounds like that.
Classic alien sounds.
Did Batch call back?
Yeah, sure. All right, Batch, we got you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm sorry if it cut out there.
No, no worries. Look at you, a pro, calling right back in. We appreciate it.
Your line, I don't know what happened, man, but all of a sudden it either said like you were dealing with a lot of explosive flatulence or... Or like you were being attacked by the aliens from the 1996 Charlie Sheen classic The Arrival.
A reference everyone understands.
We'll leave it to the imagination of the listeners to decide which one of those two things it was.
So look, rather than pretend I know where you cut off, because you know I just don't. The thing I want to ask you about is: are you team Let's Go Petey? Are you part of the movement?
Yeah, absolutely. You have to be. And I don't know how, like, online either of you guys are in terms of being on TikTok, but there's a trend on TikTok right now, and I was thinking about this. And I'm not sure where it's from, but it's like a cautious let's go. Like, it's like, let's go, I guess. Let's go. And, like, people post videos to that sound. It cannot be that. It cannot be like a let's go, Petey. Like, here we go. Well, like, it either has to be
let's
everything
go, Petey.
Or nothing. So it can't be tentative. If you're going let's go, Petey, you've got to be all in, top of your lungs. Like, if that is chant is going to be a thing tonight, it has to be so loud that I'm going to pause while calling the game so that we can go sound up on it so that you hear it over the radio. So all or nothing. Let's go, Petey, top of your lungs. If you're going to do it, commit all in. No wish-washing, no, are we doing an EP40 chant? Are we doing a Let's Go, Petey chant? The chant is Let's Go, Petey, and if you're going to do it, everybody in the building on their feet at the top of their lungs. Otherwise, it's not worth it.
So I always have this thing about how you go see your friend's community theater performance, and it wasn't very good, and you're like, it was great. I've never thought that you could chant in a voice lilts at the end way so that it's like, we don't really believe in it. Like, let's go, Petey. Like, I've never even considered that that could be expressed as a chant. And now I'm very excited about the possibility that it might be.
No, it's going to, you're right. You're bang on, Batch, but I don't. Yeah. Like it, people are going to be into it. If people are doing it, if people are buying into what Halford and Bruff are pitching, which I think that they are based on the reaction I've seen, I think they're going to do exactly what you're talking about and fully commit to the bit. And not just during the game. I think that's a key part of this, right? Like, before the game, make it loud, make it unavoidable, make it, as you said, something you have to pause to let breathe that the television broadcast has to acknowledge. Like, make it front and center for it to work.
Yeah, because in past years, we have heard chants in the building for various things. But oftentimes, they can be, you know, scattered, or it's one section really trying to do it, but no one else is getting behind it. And we've seen a change in that over the last couple of years, right? Like, the JT Miller chants mm-hmm. this year have been very loud. The Bruce, there it is chants were out of this world at times. So that's the kind of energy and level you need to bring if you're going to do it. Because if it's just scattered here or there, or it's not in unison, or it's not overpowering, then it's not going to have any impact. So why would you be chanting at all? So that's my take, is if the point is to try and give Pettersson confidence, to try and get behind him and boost him to a better performance, then I want every person in the building standing on their feet, chanting "Let's go, Petey" at the top of their lungs.
So if the game goes a certain way, and Phil DiGiuseppe comes up big, should it be reappropriated to "Let's go, PDG"?
That just
well, you're more
that
musical
flow
than me, Drance, but I don't like the rhythm of that.
No.
So then I'm guessing
it would have to be like Phil DiGiuseppe, clap, 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 clap.
Or just
that's
PDG,
awful.
PDG.
Yeah, it would be that. It would be
PDG.
That.
Okay, so yeah. So yeah. Then I'm guessing if the Canucks also get a ton of bounces, "Let's go, PDO" is also not on your wish.
PDO would have been an incredible chant early in the season. Just a legendary chant. We should have started that. Oh,
you know
that
what?
Would have been good.
Drance would be leading that chat, wouldn't he?
All right. We'll let you go on that note.
It would be a chant of one if it's me leading it, bud.
We'll let you go, Batch. Enjoy the game tonight. Thanks as always, man.
Yeah, thanks for working through
it. Good. Thanks, boys.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks, boys.
That's Brendan Batchelor, voice of the Canucks. You'll hear him on the call with Randeep Janda tonight on the station here. Quick note before we get off the air, just touching on the Jeremy Colliton story we discussed earlier. Dan Murphy from Sportsnet tweets, from my understanding, the Canucks offered Jeremy Colliton a 2-year contract, which he turned down. I don't believe that the door is closed on negotiations, though. So rejected contract offer, but still the potential for Jeremy Colliton to return is the implication there from Dan Murphy. Of course, we'll continue to monitor that story, and we will be back, as always, on Friday to react to a big one at Rogers Arena, big-time playoff hockey.
And just the note for our audience, I'll be on 11-1 on Friday because I got to fly out to Edmonton.
All right.
Game six. Let's go.
Let's go.
PD.
40%. PDO. 40% of Canadians 45 plus fear becoming a burden to their families, but firmly want to age in place. Personal support workers are here to help. In recognition of PSW Day on May 19th, Home Equity Bank is celebrating the vital support home healthcare professionals provide to Canadians 55 and better with their annual Home Care Heroes Awards. Home Equity Bank's CHIP Health products can help you access your home equity to afford home care and stay in the home you love. Visit chip.ca to learn more. That's it for us. We'll be back tomorrow with more Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650.